Everybody ready?
Yep.
Let's go.
Ahsoka!
Four Midwest Guys presents Star Wars Rebels HQ.
Battles leave scores. Some you can't see.
Holocron. I'm afraid it's changing.
I will never let my friends get hurt again.
Your anger gives you strength.
Governor Price, these rebels have proven particularly stubborn. How do you intend to solve this problem?
I need someone who sees a bigger picture.
To defeat an enemy, you must know them. Not simply their battle tactics. But their history, philosophy, art.
I must become more powerful.
Split the treasure.
Oh, that's a classic.
One last glorious day in the Grand Army of the Republic.
Jedi and Sith, the light and the dark.
They'll be the architect. Of their own destruction.
The key destroying the Sith.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Star Wars Rebels HQ. Tonight we'll be reviewing Season 3, Episode 14, Warhead. With me today is my brother Aaron.
Hey, how's it going, man?
How's it going, dude?
I'm doing all right.
Hanging in there. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Took a few episodes off.
Took a couple off, but we're welcome to have you back. And as it's like a revolving door around here, it's a hard time getting all three of us together these days. But Mr. Ankenbauer's working a little overtime, so he cannot be with us. So
can't really choose when that happens.
No. Nope. So work
especially
hard.
Especially depending on where you work.
Try not to work too hard, Mr. Ankenbauer. So as always, he's with us as a force ghost, though. All right. So, Aaron, let's talk a little bit about this episode called Warhead. I did like the opening of this episode. It seemed very Empire Strikes Back-esque to me.
Okay.
I don't remember if you remember Empire Strikes Back at the very beginning when they're launching the pods.
I kind of remember it, but I didn't make the connection at the time when I was viewing the episode.
But they used hints of the original music from that particular scene. Even.
Or like little cuts of it, more downplayed, more subtle background.
Kind of
version.
Subtle in the background. It's not exactly it, but they recreated.
It's very similar.
Very,
like
very similar. Okay. Yeah. So they're definitely trying to capture that. That ambiance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's probably a good choice in terms of like what you're doing for this episode. I mean, I think it's the more Rebels has the opportunity to kind of take music from like the more cinematic or film versions of this, I think probably the better off it will do.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because I think you've gone on this on a lot of the other like Star Wars podcasts where like the music aspects of it have always been very crucial part of Star Wars for you.
Absolutely. And I love how they continue to nod to John Williams' brilliance and to the and to give you that nice warm feeling, you know, for the fans. It's a nice nod to the fans, you know.
Yeah. That feeling. I think you like for fans like yourself, like you always kind of associate the two in some way, right?
Oh, sure. It's like it's amazing how a piece of music, especially in a movie, when you just hear it, it'll instantly take you back to that scene.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of like whenever you hear Eye of the Tiger, you always instantly go back to watching a Rocky film, right?
Exactly.
Like it's so closely associated, like they're almost inseparable. Like it's a Pavlovian response.
Right. And it's like when they do, there's a piece called The Clash of Lightsabers. Not too many people know this, just regular fans anyway, but The Clash of Lightsabers is that whole build-up when Vader is fighting Luke in the depths of Cloud City, and he's throwing shit at him, and he breaks the glass, and he goes flying out the glass, and it has that great piece of music, and it's like the slow build of the Imperial March. Every time I hear that, it takes me right to that scene, and I know what that is.
Well, I mean, I think that's one of the things that's nice about that as well, is like you can kind of change the tempo or like kind of the pacing for some of the music, and you kind of reuse it or like have it set up in a similar way. Like I think if you go to the music for the Lord of the Rings films, they actually do a really similar thing, like where they have different variations of like a similar piece, and like they use it either with like woodwinds instead of like the whole instrument or like orchestra, and like they use like a very similar piece and do multiple things with it.
Correct.
So I think, you know, for like a lot of these kind of more over-the-top trilogies, that's actually kind of an interesting dynamic to throw into it, as well as just the visual and the storytelling aspects.
Absolutely, and it really sets the tone for an episode, because this is similar. This is an Imperial probe droid. It gives you that ominous sense of the Empire.
It's kind of interesting, though, because like you almost forget like the Empire actually has droids they use in this sort of function. Like,
right.
Because after the Clone Wars, a lot of them get decommissioned, or at least the droids they used during the Clone Wars. And, like, we do see the one droid whose name I can't remember in Rogue One recently.
K2SO,
yes. K2SO.
Yes.
Who's, you know, kind of a big military type, but you don't really know what happened to them, like, following Rogue One.
Well, yeah, if you go into just the classic trilogy, when it comes to droids even, there are just servants. Yeah. There's not really a killer robot. They're just service
droids, essentially.
Yeah, they're service droids, and that's about all you see. And it's not until we get to the prequel era that suddenly you have battle droids.
Mm.
And then once we get out of the prequel droid and go into this modern era of Star Wars with Disney, that they're trying to slowly merge the two. You're starting to see droids show up a little bit here and a little bit there. Like
they actually have more functions than they did in the original films.
Right. They're just,
but they're not quite as prominent as they are in the prequels. So.
Right, exactly.
It's always one thing that's interesting to look at the dynamic differences between like the prequels and the original films. And like you see how prominent droids are and technology is, and then you go into the original films, which, you know, there's definitely part of that is the time frame when it's actually made in real life, and then you kind of have the story aspect that kind of justifies it, like the Empire kind of rummaged the, you know, entire galaxy. But
sure,
it's interesting to look at like the bits of technology that exist in the prequels that you think should in theory make it to like the original films, and they kind of don't.
Yeah, they don't, and the only thing, the only hint, that the only argument I can make is in the New Hope, when he goes into the bar, and the droids try to enter the bar, and the bartender says, "We don't serve their kind."
Yeah.
You know,
there is definitely an underclass, or a concept of racism towards droids in this universe.
Yes,
and even in this episode, you actually see it a little bit, like, where you kind of have, well, Chopper's opinion's really not, doesn't really matter that much.
Right, exactly.
Because he's just a droid.
He's just a droid.
Even though Chopper's actually saved a lot of members of the team multiple times.
Although they do refer to him as part of the team and whatever.
But it's one of those things, like, it's funny to see how often, like, just, like, his opinion's overrided because he's a droid.
Right, exactly.
And there is, like, a weird sort of subtle reference to, like, racism and slavery and, like,
a little bit.
Like, it's not overtly, overtly political, but there's that aspect of it there.
Oh, sure. I mean, when you look at how Luke Skywalker treats R2-D2, he's kind of like a buddy robot that he loves. He's like a pet. He treats him like a pet, and he's just kind of there as a pet. He's there to help him and, you know, do his dirty work for him, but, you know, he's a pet. He's not really a person. He's you know, that's about the best you get out of him. You know, that's from Luke Skywalker, of all people in the series.
Like, that's really the best droids are treated, too.
Right. So
anything below that, and, like, it gets worse and worse. It's just eventually just like, oh, fuck it. Let's let the droids blow up and destroy a ship. We don't care about that droid. It's just a droid.
Well, as you can see, we like to get off on tangents. And we got on a really good one there, and I would love to talk about it more. Well, I think
we've actually gone off on that tangent a few times.
We have.
Like how droids are treated in this universe.
We have, but, you know, it's been a while. And I love going on these tangents with you, my brother. We should probably have our own, like, special podcast just called Tangent, you know?
Yeah.
Going off on tangents.
I think we have to be real careful with the name, because I think there was another podcast out there called Tangentially Speaking or some shit like that.
Oh, okay. Well,
I don't remember like what the actual subject of it was, but I think it was just like an interview thing. Yeah. I've listened to it a few times. I just can't remember who did it.
Maybe we'll just call it Way Off Target or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. So, but
what happens when stormtroopers fire?
And they actually hit something? Ooh.
Deeply they don't metaphoric. Hit it. That's the joke. It's just off target.
Stay on target. Stay on target. And speaking of staying on target, let's move back to Star Wars Rebels, shall we? So, yeah, so it opens up with a great Empire Strikes Back feeling. You get that whole, you know exactly what's going on. You know what they're firing. It's going to be some sort of a droid. Instead of an Imperial probe droid, though, we find out that it's what looks to be like a protocol droid. And as a matter of fact, this particular protocol droid is the original artwork from for R2-D2, for C-3PO that Ralph McQuarrie drew. Mm. Now, granted, he's blue in this, and the original droid was gold.
Yeah.
But still, it's the same, it's a very same similar face, design. Same body style.
It definitely has, like, kind of a classic sci-fi feel to it. Like, you look at it, and, like, it's definitely reminiscent of, like, Metropolis, like, the old, like, 1920s or 1940s movie.
Like, the robots and stuff like that. Yeah.
Either that, or even if you go back to, like, I think it's either Young Justice or Teen Titans or one of those things that has, like, a version of Red Tornado that's actually really similar in the face, and as well as, like, kind of the body setup.
Yeah, just
as well.
Kind of has, like, the square.
Yeah, like, it's very basic, almost like you took, like, a clay mask of a person, like a mold, and you just kind of put it in, like, a metallic form.
Right.
Like, it's very similar to that.
Similar to that, yeah, I agree. Almost like a mask, like a play mask or something in a way. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Like, not quite like the Roman death mask sort of things where it actually would incorporate details. Not
like
that, but
like a Greek mask they would wear in a play, like, or something. Yeah, like,
it's very kind of plain. Just blank face sort of thing.
Yes, agreed. But we find out that these, I guess these droids are, it's actually a killer droid in a way. Yeah,
later on we see it, like, it actually transforms and everything. Like, it extends, like, it actually becomes, like, this kind of cool, like, stalker sort of thing.
Kind of, yeah. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But it's very smart, though. Because right off the bat, it decides it's being attacked by the spiders, the space spiders. And it basically says, I can't give away my location or my position.
Mm.
And it's smart enough to know that the Empire will come looking for it. So, I'll just let myself get hurt here. And not give away
it's actually kind of interesting in that regard, too. Because, like, on first watching of that, like, you don't necessarily pick up that it's not giving itself away. You just, like, the first viewing of it, you're just like, oh, it's just kind of a weak C-3PO-like droid. So, like, of course the spiders are going to kick its ass.
Right, exactly.
And then you get to later on the episode, it's like, oh, no, I was wrong.
I was totally wrong. It totally could have killed it. Yeah,
it could have killed all those spiders.
Right, but I'm not going to give away my position. So, some pretty cool tactical programming. Yeah,
it's very interesting in that you kind of see its ability to kind of scan its horizons later on. It's like, clearly it's able to kind of
strategize very quickly.
Yeah, it's able to determine, like, what's surrounding it in brief seconds. Like, it's...
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, we'll go into that more later, but it's actually quite impressive for a droid. And, like, even the other droids seem moderately impressed with it.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, he takes the inventory like that, you know, with AP, so later on, so... Yeah, it's designed to make strategy and tactical, I think, decisions. Yeah,
I mean, and we've seen a couple strategy droids throughout the season, like even some left over from the Clone Wars, and, like, you look at how quickly this thing works, and it's like, clearly it's an upgrade over older models.
Older models, yeah. Maybe the same, a little bit of that technology, who knows. So the next scene, we get into the whole... Well, I'm sorry, but you really need to stay here. You're the chief of security.
The
opening
for the episode, or, like, kind of the setup for the rest of the episode.
The setup of why Zeb has to stick.
Even though it kind of just works because that's how it's written to work. Like, if we're being honest.
And I know it's why it was in there. It was just kind of like, okay, we're just going to throw it in your face. We're not going to do anything subtle. We're just, this is why it's happening, and we're we're not going to give you anything.
The crew's doing some sort of training thing that doesn't need to be explained.
Yeah, we're going off on a training mission, and you need to stay. But I don't want to go.
Well, too bad.
Too bad. Yeah, I actually thought that was a little.
Yeah, it kind of works because the plot determines it needs to work.
Right, and not only that, but I thought for Zeb that's kind of demeaning. He's someone
who's normally part of the entire crew.
He's part of the crew. He's part of the family, but also he's a big, strong, burly guy. This guy wouldn't go whining to Hera like a little kid to his mother.
I understand boredom. And, like, no matter how big you are, that's a curse upon everyone.
I just see Zeb taking an order.
You would expect him to be more stoic about it.
Yes, just take your lumps and take your orders like a good troop, like a good soldier. And
I think the idea was kind of writing some bit of comedy relief for it, but I don't know if it really hits.
I think it was, and I have to remind myself that it is a kid's show. I do forget that, you know, at times.
Well, I mean, I think if you look at modern cartoons, we kind of expect more of them than we did 20 years ago.
Very much so.
Like, in many ways, like, you can look at a lot of modern cartoons, and, like, you can look at them the same way, like, the Flintstones was originally, where it's more of a family show, or, like, it's a show for everyone. It's just different audiences are going to pick up different aspects of it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it just, like I said, to me, it was, I always look, I guess, to expect more. And it's just like, I just don't see Zeb doing that. I mean, yes.
It feels out of character.
Yes. Is Hera the matriarch of the group? Yes, she is. Does Zeb respect her? Yes, he does. Mm. But is he going to go whining and complaining to her because he doesn't get his way?
Mm.
I don't see him doing that.
That's fair, man.
Just my interpretation of the character.
To you, that seems off character.
Yes, to me it does. Now, for a cartoon series, no. And you're right. It's meant to be comic relief.
Mm.
But for a kid,
I could see where it seems off character for a lot of people because it seems a bit excessive at points.
Yeah, it does. And go ahead.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
But speaking of banter, though, I thought I did like in this episode the banter between Zeb and AP5. I did enjoy that. I thought that was good banter.
Yeah, it was amusing. And I like AP5 as a character, even though he does come across as a tad annoying at points.
At times, yes. Yeah.
Like, he can be a bit, too much. But at the same time, it's an amusing character, and it's a nice change in personality for that universe. Because you don't really have anyone that's that sort of annoyed, depressed sort of thing.
Character in Star Wars, no, it doesn't really exist. No.
Yeah.
So he's kind of unique, and that's what gives him a nice.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons, you look at different characters Hanzo, and he's kind of unique to the universe.
Yes.
And you're well, that's one of the reasons you like him is because he's kind of unique. He's throws a different element. Yes. It's not the same old personality type that you're used to seeing within the storylines.
AP5 is a much more depressed C-3PO. C-3PO gets minorly depressed from time to time. It's our lot in life to suffer this way. But, he's still a protocol.
Yeah, but you look at AP5 and there's a real ego and narcissism there that C-3PO does not have.
No, not even a little bit.
AP5's I'm clearly better than you all.
Yes.
And I'm amazed you don't recognize this.
And I don't know how you've survived this long without me.
Yeah.
Precisely, yeah. The superior.
It's an interesting kind of dynamic, especially having it kind of on the underdog team, essentially.
Yeah, it is. You're right. He's kind of... And I just like how he bounces off Zeb, because Zeb is...
Yeah, you have Zeb as kind of a rough kind of personality type, and versus someone who's kind of snooty.
Yeah, very snooty versus very rugged, and it works pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did enjoy the banter quite a bit, and the back and forth.
Yeah, also a personality type that kind of goes well with Chopper as well. Where they kind of see them kind of fighting and bickering between AP5 and Chopper. But it kind of makes sense, and it works with the characters, and it's still pretty amusing.
Well, I thought Sabine put it best on, I think it was a couple episodes ago, it's AP5 and Chopper were made on the same assembly line. They're perfect.
They're both
match.
Weird for their types.
Yes, yeah. And they're a nice compliment.
Mm.
It's just AP5, you can understand everything that he says, where in Chopper, you just have to go by the tone of his
it's the same R2-D2 model, where it's you're just getting the tone, and it kind of allows you to interpret what he's actually saying.
Right, exactly.
It allows you to project yourself into the character a little.
Yeah.
Even though it's a small droid.
Smaller droid, but still. So, but yeah, they make a nice combination. Another C-3PO R2 for Rebels.
I don't know. I actually think I like that combination more than I like C-3PO and R2.
Really?
Yeah,
I'm still partial to C-3PO and R2 just because of probably my childhood, but you're probably right. I don't want to admit it, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the part of the reason is as narcissistic and snooty as AP5 is, I actually think he's the less annoying character than C-3PO is, and I think that's a good part of it.
Well, I think it's because C-3PO is a complete and total weakling for starters. Mm. I think where AP5 has a little bit of balls behind him.
Yeah.
Even if it is from a snooty, superior.
It's ego running wild. It's
point of view.
All right, fine. This is a combat scenario. I have a gun. Let's see where this goes.
I mean, when C-3PO is presented with a rough situation, let's surrender. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas it's AP5, at least, seems like he's analyzing the situation, seeing if he can get away or, survive the scenario.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, so, again, trying to get back on track. So they find the droid. Obviously, he's been disabled. He's been hurt. They do a quick analysis of him, and Zeb decides to take him home, essentially. Well, yeah, him and
Chopper have a disagreement over it. Right. Chopper has a little tiny hammer, wants to kill him.
Wants to disassemble him pretty quickly.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't think Zeb's wrong in regards to, like, taking the droid and trying to, like, do an analysis. It's just when he gets back to the base, they just reboot it.
Well,
whereas, I feel like you could just... There's different ways you could analyze it, figure out where it came from, like, maybe disassemble it slightly. Like, there's ways you can go about it, seeing it's useful.
And I agree. I would agree with that, but I think AP-5 caught Zeb off, or caught Zeb off guard, and because Zeb just asked him, well, can you turn him back on? He's like, of course I can, with this power unit, click.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, he's turned on. So
yeah. So it was a little bit of, like, I was just kind of curious if we could, but okay.
Right. He's
sort of thing.
Well, of course I can with this power unit.
Duh. And AP-5 was just like, well, of course I can, you idiot. It?
Yeah, here, just, watch.
It's not hard at all. Power, droid, on.
And of course, at first he has amnesia. And Zeb just
kind
of... Zeb becomes impressed again with his scanning abilities. Mm. And he's seeing how much... How he's even superior to AP-5 and AP-5's ego. And that's one of the reasons I think he wants to keep him around. And
yeah. Because pretty much he's just like, you don't like him. You don't like Chopper, doesn't like you. I like you even more. Good for you.
Yeah, and he just looks at him as, well, he must be another inventory droid.
So yeah, he's like, why okay, not? New toaster, whatever.
Yeah, why not? You know, AP-5, we did it with you, so what the hell? Yeah. You know, what's another stray, you know? So, you know, I don't know. I guess I could see Zeb's point of view looking at it like that from that
kinda,
point of view.
But at the same time, once you reboot it, you think you would want to run a few more tests on it?
Just a few before you just walk away from it.
Because there's plenty of droids in this universe that have tracking abilities where you can kind of follow them. Like, you would at least want to make sure that's disabled, right?
Well, at the very minimum, turn him off because he has to go get that message from Fulcrum about the droid, but he doesn't know that at the time. But at least shut him down while you're gone.
Yeah.
Don't leave him with the droids.
Mm.
I mean, don't get me wrong, AP-5 and Chopper are very smart, but I would definitely turn him off while I'm away from
him. Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like if you're going to reboot him, that's fine. But, like, wouldn't you want to, like, analyze him, see what information he has, what he's programmed to do?
Yeah.
Because clearly AP-5 is capable of reprogramming him and thus capable of just analyzing what he was programmed to do in the first place.
Yeah, he can do... He's limited, though, which is... We'll talk about that a little bit later, but yeah, he can only do certain parts. And I'm granted that's for the plot of the story's sake,
I think. Well, not just that, but, like, it makes sense, like, there's certain built-in firewalls, like, in certain programs. Like, that's actually kind of a logical thing to have, I guess.
Okay, I didn't really look at it that way, but, yeah.
But, I mean, like even with, like, basic computer setups, like, you do allow limited access to certain individuals, or, like, you have different degrees of freedom.
Certain levels of security. Yeah. It could be. I didn't really quite look at it or think about it like that at the time, but I guess I should have. All right, so Zeb finds out from Fulcrum, a.k.a. Agent Callus, that what the droid really is, and it's actually a recon slash assassin. You even see
like the quick schematics of when it
extends
and becomes, you know, more dangerous. It's attack mode, I guess.
And suddenly Zeb has his Carabas moment. And like, ah, shit.
Yeah. It's fun of all the small words you use in place of curse words, and yet they still work just as well.
Yeah, the tones work just as well. Yeah. It's just like, what was it, Battlestar Galactica, instead of saying fuck, said frack.
Yeah.
Worked just as well.
Well, what was it? Was it Firefly where they actually started using, like, Mandarin curse words in place of, like, actually cursing?
You might be right. It's been a while since I've seen that show. Yeah. It's a really good show, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Kelsey's obsessed with it, so I've seen it on multiple occasions.
I'm sure you have. The movie's really good, too.
I haven't seen Serenity yet.
You haven't? No, oh, you really? You got to see that.
No, apparently, like, it's uncanon for her, so, like, I've never had to watch it, so...
Oh, okay. All right. Well, still. It's worth seeing.
I know they did a limited, like, runoff, like, comic or book about, like, the Preacher character.
Yeah,
he's that actually sounded kind of cool.
He's kind of a cool character, yeah. Yeah. But the movie's worth seeing. You should see it anyway. But anyway, getting back, so we get to the whole part where the thing, they find out what he really is, and he suddenly comes back to life when he hears the word Rebel.
Yeah, Rebel Base? Rebel Base.
Rebels. Model DX, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, that's right. I'm supposed to kill these people.
I'm supposed to kill you, or at least get out of here and report you.
So yeah.
He goes into battle mode, and he no longer looks like a protocol droid.
Yep, he transforms.
Instead, he turns into the robot Slender Man, and kind of, in a way. Kind of,
yeah.
Yeah, kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Red eyes. Kind of comes, face comes apart.
Yeah, one of the things I found really funny about it is, like, you look at how capable of a droid that is once it's actually in battle mode, and you're like, oh, dude, that puts the Clone War droids to shame.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely...
Like, you imagine, like, an army of those fighting, like, Jedis? Oh, even the Jedis would be
fucking Jedis dead, would man. Be... Have a hard time with them, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, granted, lightsabers would make a big difference.
Oh, yeah, but at the same time, man, like, you look at just how capable and how quick maneuvering oh, yeah. that is.
Well, you it took a lot of damage, too. I mean, Zeb hit it with his blaster. Zeb hit it with his... When he turned his rifle into his staff.
Yeah.
With the electric on the... You know, the electric... things on the end.
But yeah, like, it took some damage.
Yeah, it took some serious damage.
Like, you probably could have had that thing nothing but a torso and a head, and it would have kept crawling towards him.
Not only that, but it was kind of cool after they damaged it, and the thing kind of went on like a killing spree.
Oh, were other droids?
Other droids. It was kind of like a creepy, it kind of felt like a horror movie.
You know what it
kind
of reminded me of? The Thing. Like, the, where they're up, like, in the Alaskan base, and, like, it's like choosing like different hosts, like, and it's like copying their image and such, but like it has that kind of sneaking through the corridor sort of like thematic element that like kind of brought it to mind, because it really does kind of go to this like thing stalking things and like preying on them and being like almost like this robotic ghoul sort of thing.
Kind of, yeah, because he's taking them for parts for himself. Yeah.
Which is brilliant. You don't see other droids just, like, scavenging other live droids and be like, nope, need this.
I'm sorry, but your heart. I need to take your heart.
Yeah. But it's weird because, like, you actually see it, like, leaking fluid at a certain point, and then once you get to that dead droid, it's like, nope.
Not anymore. Took care of that.
It's like, it fixed itself, like, in less than 10 minutes.
Yeah, it took out two droids. It took out a protocol droid, an R2 unit, and it took out a Gonk droid, unfortunately.
Yeah. But, like, but yeah. You look at how quickly it scavenged for parts. Like,
yeah.
That's impressive. Like, if you had an army of them, they would have just taken the shit from the dead ones to repair themselves.
Kill the other one, the wounded to...
Yeah. They probably would have done that. Like, oh, that one's not usable anymore. He doesn't need this. I'm fixed. He's still dead. Our army's plus one.
That's not a bad idea for a future episode, Aaron, actually. That's kind of creepy and
cool. Oh, yeah, it's a zombie army, essentially. A
zombie robotic army or something.
Yeah, like, in the way it functions, it
almost
functions... Consumes
itself.
Yeah, it works in kind of a ghoul-like format, even though it is a robot.
Yeah, I found that very cool in this whole episode.
Yeah, like, honestly, that's a very cool droid. And, like, you're like, oh, why did that droid not continue? And then by the end of the episode, it's like, oh, okay, that's a critical flaw. I see why they didn't continue with that. I mean, you could have continued with just kind of getting rid of that flaw, you know?
Yeah. Just
end the self-destruct sequence thing. You probably could have kept manufacturing them.
Maybe, or maybe it was designed to do that so that you thought it was down, and then it blows up its target after you shut it down, and you don't realize it.
You look at how capable that droid is, and you're like, why did that not... Why did you stop manufacturing them? Because that thing could have just destroyed planets.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's only a limited number. I don't know. Maybe it's a, you know, costly
thing. It definitely comes across like a prototype unit in some ways. Like, because you don't... That's the first time you've ever seen anything
like that. It's a perfect spy droid, really. I mean, it can conceal itself as a protocol droid, which there's a billion of in the galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
And just, you know, wander around
without
even going into battle mode.
And funny thing is, because robots are such a lower class, like, in this universe, like, no one would give it a second chance. Because Chopper dresses up like Imperial droids all the time.
Right.
They never notice.
No, they're like, it's just another droid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're the perfect spies in this universe.
But yeah, so it's a cool design. It was a cool concept to see it put in place.
Not only just, like, the cool design, but, like, how they started shooting, like, some of those, like, scenes of it, like, just taking other parts or, like...
Yeah.
Like, there was a really good directorial decision of, like, how you shot those.
Yeah, I agree. How they show the protocol droid has no head. at all. And the
or you see like flap. Chopper kind of looking for it, and then you see like little parts kind of falling off from like the like other corner around the corner.
Yeah, very creepy horror-esque almost. Yeah, so I thought it was kind of cool. We've never seen that before in Rebels, that's for sure. Nothing like a horror scene, anyway.
I mean, not unless you count the spiders, but it didn't really shoot it that well.
No, because you can't... Yeah,
I mean, that really came across more like just generic fantasy.
On this show, what you could never do with human beings, what they did with these robots.
Oh, just like the robot eating the other robots?
Right, exactly, essentially. You wouldn't be able to do that with people, and not on a kids show, not on Disney XD. So this is as close to horror as you're ever going to get.
Yeah. Once again, like if Star Wars ever starts expanding into the like other shows, like you're really kind of hoping for a Netflix/HBO sort of thing.
Someday,
way you could allow for something to be a bit more gory.
Absolutely, I would love that.
I don't know. Do you think that would like kind of kill like kind of how it's set up if it goes like too dark?
You have to, if you're going to go super dark with a Star Wars storyline, you're going to have to find a way to separate it from the rest of the storylines.
Okay.
In order to keep content and keep the feel. If you're going to go dark, you need to go marooned on some random planet in the middle of nowhere. You know, and you have to stay there.
Like it has to be like just a very generic thing. Like you wouldn't expect that from just like Star Wars Underground or Underworld.
Well, if you do the Underworld theme, you can go darker, but you couldn't do horror.
Yeah.
If you want to do horror, you've got to put them on a planet.
I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of sci-fi shows that have had like a couple episodes where it goes kind of horror themed pretty easily because you have like those sort of creatures in their universes. Well,
you can. That's what I mean. You'd have to do it on like a solitary planet away from everything else. Like,
well, I don't know. I mean, what was it?
You can't really.
Was it Star Trek that had Borg or was that?
Yeah, Star Trek did the Borg.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, you look at Firefly, they had Reavers. Like you have like those sort of. Right. Creatures in the universe, I feel like you can do like a really similar thing to what this episode did.
Yeah, but I don't think you could do that. You couldn't have zombie like eating creatures all over the Star Wars galaxy. I just don't think that would work.
Like it'd have to be contained to like a planet's atmosphere or something.
Or it has to be contained to a random planet in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
That's the only way that works in the current Star Wars environment. And the way they... And the tone, the Disney setting, and then really the way George even said it from the
get-go. So you don't expect to have that kind of what we have for like Marvel TV versus film, where it's like you can allow some of the Marvel TV shows to go a lot darker?
Yeah, I think you can go darker, but you can't go horror level.
Okay.
And then that's kind of where I'm sticking my point to is the horror level of darkness. You can't really go that dark.
I don't know.
You can for an episode, but again, it can't be... It's got to be something special. It can't be something common throughout the universe. It can't be like reefers are in the Firefly galaxy or something along those lines.
Fair enough.
So, but again, I digress. And again, we go back to... So Zeb finally comes up with a plan. And his plan is to simply, I'm going to grab it. You can disable it, right? I can disable it.
I think. Yeah, it was kind of on the fly sort of plans. Like, and even AR is kind of like... Wait, that's it?
That's your plan?
That's the whole plan.
You're going to grab it, I'm going to disable it.
Okay. Like, I can do it, but, like, really, that's your plan is just to catch it.
Yep.
Okay.
And it worked, to his credit. Kind of. I mean, they disabled it.
Yeah.
So, of course, the minute they turn him off...
Of course, Zeb took a couple, like, hits in the process.
Yeah.
Like, it was not an easy task on his part. But he kind of just powers through it, essentially.
He finally just, I've got him, turn him off, you know, and he finally gets him.
Yeah.
You know, in a wrestling lock.
It's kind of fun just watching AB5 trying to figure out how to get around and, like, to the spot he needs.
Yeah.
Like, you see him just kind of slowly walk around, like, to, like, reach underneath to the back of his head.
He's like, come on, hurry up. Excuse me, but yeah, so they turn it off, and immediately they find out he goes into bomb mode.
Yeah.
And which I guess is some sort of anti-capture programming that
AP... That's how they describe it. And they're like, okay, that kind of makes sense. Like, especially if that's a prototype, you don't want that technology going to other, like, resistances or whatever. I kind of see it.
But the one thing I found funny is, and the one thing that these that the Rebels have yet to learn about AP5 is AP5 doesn't reveal everything at once.
Mm.
He just gives the information as it comes, or well, as it flows.
He kind of gives the information as it seems like it's needed, or precisely, as requested.
After it happens. So, again, it's like you would think you'd learn with AP5 now, okay, tell me everything you know about this particular
model. Yeah, you would ask questions thoroughly, because he's going to be brief.
Yeah.
He'll get to the point. That's kind of his thing. It's like, he's direct.
Right. And instead of asking for a full briefing, it's like, oh, he's gone into Imperial capture mode. That's probably what say he set off his bomb. You know, it's like, well, why didn't you tell me that in the first place? You know,
kind of like that would have been an integral part of this plan.
So
I don't know. Does the fact that Chopper's able to just kind of temporarily freeze the bomb seem a bit like
convenient? But I thought, okay, if you're going to put a bomb countdown, how do you stop it without AP5 being able to reprogram it?
Yeah, like okay, that's one way. Storyline, fine, but it's one of those things. Like, that's a little like have we ever seen Chopper freeze anything?
No, that's a new power of his. Yeah, that's
like it's convenient. Like he has a bunch of little things that he does that are all just real convenient timing.
I didn't really give it too much of a second thought, just because he's kind of that protocol droid like R2-D2 we didn't know could fly until we got to the prequels. You know, he's just got all these gadgets in him. You know, he's
pretty much the Swiss Army knife of robots.
He's a rolling Swiss Army knife. All the R2 units are, the HP units are, you know, same thing.
I don't know, it's not that I'm against it, and it kind of, it's an interesting way of taking on and blowing up the ship later, but like, it just seemed convenient. That's all.
Well, yeah, again, it's, you know.
And once again, we go to the beginning of the episode, it's like, well, it kind of just happens that way because it's what the storyline demands.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, it moves the plot along.
Yeah.
But again, Zeb finally comes up with an actual big plan or a.
It was actually a good plan too. Yeah.
He's like, okay, let's reprogram it so the bomb goes off when he reconnects with the Imperial network.
You even have that funny line from AP5, which was like, oh, sorry. I was just amazed you actually had a somewhat good plan there.
Yeah, I was amazed you came up with a good idea. That's a really good plan. I'm kind of shocked.
Yeah.
I didn't think you were capable of such thoughts. It's, you know,
I thought that was kind of beyond your brain.
Yeah. In that typical superiority
thing
complex of his.
Yeah, it was actually probably one of the better lines of the episode.
Yeah, it was. It was another piece of that great banter that I did like and enjoy about the episode.
Yeah, like, overall, like, I don't know if this episode really advanced much for the series or the season, but, like, it was an okay episode.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it was entertaining. It was fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, realistically, once we got past like the halfway point for the season, I was kind of expecting to progress the greater storyline more, and I don't think we've really seen that so far.
Well, yeah, not yet, but we'll get to it. Let's hold that for the end.
Okay.
So, and again, credit to Zeb on an ultimate strategy that ultimately works.
Yeah,
you know,
it actually succeeds pretty well, and it looks like it probably takes down most of the ship, if not the entire ship.
Yeah, I mean, that's a hell of a warhead inside,
especially
that robot.
Because it's next to other droids that also have said warheads.
So the whole Star Destroyer just
becomes like a chain reaction.
Yeah, and Kallus's reaction is like, "What just happened?" I was like, "Wouldn't you be like, what the fuck?" Even if you are Fulcrum, you would be like, holy shit, why did that ship just blow up?
I don't know. Like, maybe that's common?
I hope not. I wouldn't want to be on a Star Destroyer if they blow up all the time.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you go back, like, pre-mid-season, you had, like, the entire episode arc that was about, like, malfunctioning equipment because it was kind of, you know, tampered with, but
that just shows you, if you take away all the
armor.
I mean,
we've already talked about how shitty, like, the Stormtroopers, like, armor is because of how cheap it is.
I guess they, you know, figured they didn't need to put much armor on the inside. So, if you blow something up on the inside of the ship, the whole damn thing.
I don't know, you think there'd be, like, protocols for, like, cutting parts of the ship off and, like, kind of minimizing damage, especially with ships that large.
You would think, you know, the battleships, they have, you know, sealable sections and stuff for compartmental damage. Yeah, but yeah. So credit to Zeb. It, you know, it pulls it off.
Yeah, like arguably that's probably one of the biggest wins for the Rebels in a while.
It's a pretty good strategy. But speaking of strategy, unfortunately the Empire has Thrawn. And we end up with the episode at the end where Kallus says, "You don't seem to be upset, sir, by the loss of the robots and about the ship."
Yeah.
And then he explains it to him. He goes, "Well, they may have won this battle, but we're going to win the war because I only sent out 94 robots to these 94 planets, so I now know their rebel base, instead of being 1,000 planets,
yeah,
I've narrowed it down to these 94.
It's kind of like the net is getting closing and closing in, essentially.
Right, exactly.
And I don't know. I feel like this is the one scene that doesn't make this episode filler.
It doesn't.
This is the one thing that makes it actually part of the larger plot.
Oh, absolutely, because this is all part of Thrawn's plan. He's strategizing. Yeah, he lost 94 robots and a Star Destroyer, but he might have
lost 94 robots.
Maybe.
We don't know how many were actually on board.
That's true.
But there might be like 50 out there.
But we're assuming still that he brought up at least 90. Well, no, because he says he's narrowed it down to these 94.
Mm. Well, that's the planets they were sent out to. So it had to have been one of them that came back.
Right, exactly.
And if they don't actually have track of all of them at the time, that could be.
So to me, that says that 94 of them returned, and that's how he knows.
Maybe.
Either way, it doesn't matter how you look at it, I guess. But but yes,
yeah, it definitely fits with the character of Thrawn. It kind of redeems the episode in making it not filler. It kind of goes into the little grander plot of it.
And I think it's a great way to explain how Thrawn is closing in on him a little bit.
It's a very interesting thing. Like, it's kind of like... Actually, no, that'd probably be a poor reference, since that's going to reference something else. But it definitely does kind of... It makes sense. Like, if you actually throw them out like in chunks and you kind of... like hit something and then you don't, and then like it's
like
win or lose, you kind
of
win.
Right. Well, it's like playing Battleship, you know, you've got a general idea of where the ship is by the end of the game. Even if you've lost, you can go back and look and go, I can see where you probably were in this area. So instead of having thousands of planets or points, I narrowed it down to a certain area. So.
Yeah, it's definitely a good strategy on his part, and it's a closing net that really does kind of suggest he's getting closer and closer, and like it fits the character well. It's an interesting plot point.
Oh yeah, because now, especially with his intellect and his strategy, him being able to concentrate on just 94 of 1,000.
Also, you also have to ask how many of those 94 planets is actually habitable,
and right?
Like, easily habitable actually makes sense to use as a base.
Precisely.
Like, there's probably factors where you can start checking one or two off. That one has a poisonous atmosphere for most species. You probably wouldn't want to use that one.
Or they're not there, or we've seen them jump from this point to this point. So how did they do that? You can start backtracking them.
Yeah.
You know, their jump points. Like, I've got a report of them here and here and here and here. Like he did in that one episode, he backtracked them.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, so I mean, that 94 could get whittled down to like 20 or 30 really quickly.
Real quick, yeah. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen, you know, obviously.
Like, I don't know if we'll necessarily see that thought process shown on screen.
Maybe, maybe not.
But it definitely seems like something, you know, the character could whittle down in time.
It makes it very believable for us now going forward that the Rebels are have very short time left at Chopper Base. So if they decide that they have an episode where the Empire just suddenly shows up one day, then we know why without having to really think about it. So, all right. Well, I think we've dissected the heck out of this, and hopefully we haven't gone off too many tangents for you, but let's go down into final thoughts and grades. All right, Aaron, final thought and grade for Warhead.
Okay. I'd probably give it a B minus maybe.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of this episode that doesn't really add to the greater mythology or the universe. It's kind of entertaining, though. Mm-hmm. Like, you do have, like, those kind of fun dynamics. You do have that sort of interesting robot stalking around the corner sort of thing. I don't think it's a great episode, but I don't think it's horrible either. Like, I feel like it's entertaining on its own. It's just, if you're going into it expecting it to, like, the season to pick up and kind of speeding along the main storyline, it might leave a little to be desired.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would actually go on. I began when I first started thinking about grades for this episode. I started at C+, and then I said no. It's got some really good banter in it. It does connect at the end with Thrawn, and that horror scene with the robot is pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
And how that robot is something that Thrawn would use and would throw out there. And the more I got to thinking about it, it's like, you know what? No, I'm going to upgrade it to a solid B. It's pretty much a good, it's a good B episode. It's entertaining.
You can rewatch it a couple times.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, my daughters wanted to watch it twice now, you know, and for her, that's pretty good for a 7 year old's, you know,
attention span.
And she watches the whole thing. She doesn't stop.
Yeah.
So, you know, so yeah, it's a decent episode and it's worth checking out. So, all right. So where can you find 4 Midwest Guys? Well, it's really easy. Just go to google.com and type in the number 4 Midwest Guys. There you'll find our Facebook page, our Twitter account, our YouTube page, where we also post our podcasts, our Podbean account, where we, the main site that we put these podcasts on. Go out there, check us out. We've got a lot of other stuff that we do. We do Marvel's, Marvel DC Kings, which we want to get back to. There's a lot of things coming up we want to do. Like we keep talking about, we need to get together and really hammer it out. But Stranger Things I'd love to do, and a lot of other Netflix series, Defender series, etc.
I think we both were wanting to like finish Westworld at some point and maybe decide to do something.
Yes,
like that.
I want to do Westworld. I've only seen it, I think, the first episode, but I need to sit down and binge it.
Yeah.
Be done with it. There's a lot of other stuff that we do. We also do all the big blockbuster movie reviews, especially the comic book movies.
Yeah.
We review all
And I think there's going to be a lot coming out this year, so
yeah.
We might even be in talks about like doing a special for just expectations or something.
Something might not be a bad idea, especially after this latest Logan trailer dropped, which were talking about before the show. Just, damn, does that look good.
Oh, yeah. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
I am far more excited about that than I thought I would be.
Yeah, this is by far... I don't think I've ever been hyped for a Wolverine movie before.
No, not so much.
Yeah, this is, I've always liked Wolverine, but this is pretty damn cool looking so far. So we'll be doing all that and so much more yet to come. So please check us out and let us know how we're doing. Drop us a line on, through Podbean, drop us a line through Facebook, Twitter. Also, drop us a line on YouTube as well. Just make sure you hit the subscribe and the like buttons, folks, and follow us so you know when we drop a new podcast so you get to it right away. All right. Well, Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, not a problem.
And for B. Willie saying, may the Force be with you always.